I've experienced enough times in my life where my fear of spending money, it got in the way of me earning more. Mm-hmm. And so that's happened enough times for me to know, not necessarily to say yes to every opportunity that's marketed to me or presented to me, but I've had enough of those experiences to allow me to say, okay, I certainly don't need to disregard something just because there's a cost associated to it. And
right.
I think for a lot of people, if you're anything like me and frugality comes easily to you, you might naturally be opposed to anything that is that has a cost associated to it.
I think, you know, one of the keys to having a modern money mindset is to commit to continually learning. And sometimes that education may come with a cost, especially the further along that you get. But at the end of the day, you just budget for it, right? You don't have to overcomplicate the fact that it's not free. You just simply budget for it the same way that you have categories for food, transportation, entertainment. You should have an annual commitment for your learning.
Welcome to the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success, where we explore life at the intersection of money. I'm Julian.
And I'm Kirsten. Today we're talking about when to level up and consider paying for a community, course, or program.
Yeah.
I love this one because whenever people ask me what I splurge on, my go-to answer is typically like great meals, travel, and content.
Is that true?
Yes. I mean, wine is kind of lumped into great meals.
Credit card statement would detect that is a lie.
For the most part, that is pretty much what I splurge on. I'm one of those people that spends well over $100 a month on content and communities between Substack, Patreon, Medium, I mean, and several more. My content game is highly filtered, and it has been for a really long time.
Yeah, if you've been listening to this podcast, you've probably seen if you've been listening to this podcast, you've probably heard a couple themes. And one of them is I'm always fascinated by the weird corners of the internet that Kirsten always finds. And so to her point, it's highly curated, highly specific, but she has access to lots of information and data and perspectives that I just do not have. And that's part of the reason why I love her.
Yeah. I mean, it started honestly as an attempt to reduce the number of ads that I was getting every day. But then it became this way to access some of my favorite writers' work, because in between writing books, they would create these like paid newsletters or platforms where they would contribute and we would, you know, pay to see them write.
Yeah.
But now, like, it's a way to connect with like-minded people. And I just think it's worth every penny because it keeps me sane. There's this quote from Laura McCowan, who is a writer and leads this really large global sobriety support community. And she says, one stranger who understands your experience exactly will do for you what hundreds of close friends and families who don't understand cannot.
Yeah.
And I completely agree with that. You know, immersing yourself in like-minded communities can really be a game changer because humans are social creatures. And if you want the things that you know to be impactful, at some point they also have to become social. You have to like interact with them somewhere besides just in your head.
Yeah, we do a lot of talking about money and obviously writing about money. So I don't know, honestly, if we've already spoken about that topic on our podcast. If not, I'm going to act like we haven't. But to your point about the importance of community, I think it's one of the most underrated aspects of not even just financial success, but success as a whole. And I think part of the reason why it's so important is because it normalizes some of those behaviors and habits. Mm-hmm. And it also gives you an environment where you can see people at different levels. What some people may be behind where you are, not quite where you want to be, and
right.
They're looking up to you, which puts you in a position to tutor or mentor mm-hmm. or teach others. But then you have the benefit of also being able to look up and see people and sort of chart the same path. You can choose to replicate it or, you know, learn from them or say, actually, where they are isn't where I want to be. And I'm so glad that I saw what that looks like at this stage in my life, because now I know that I'm going to move in another direction. So,
yeah,
it's really, really interesting.
Yeah, I realized that this was an idea that was easy for me to understand because I was actually a really early adopter of paid content in communities back in the early 2000s, like before there was YouTube as we know it, like before YouTube was the second largest search engine. There were these natural hair communities. They were like forums and message boards where we would all share tips and product reviews and progress pictures. This was well before Black women were wearing their hair naturally curly. Like it was kind of countercultural to kind of wear your hair natural. And so these boards were originally free and it was kind of run by moderators on like a volunteer basis, but they got to be so big that the admins eventually asked for help to cover the costs of just moderating and time and server space and all that jazz.
Yeah.
And it was really cheap. I think it was like $10 a year and it was done through like a really clunky PayPal interface, but I was happy to pay it because it just made sense. I was something that I did every single day. And I had started to build a relationship with these strangers across the world based off hair care. And I loved it. Were you ever like participating in early chat rooms?
Chat rooms? No.
Maybe not hair care, but
I've never been no. So I think in part, a lot of it is because I just grew up in and was raised an only child. And so I'm accustomed to being by myself and managing some of those things by myself. And I think that's had an impact on just the my approach or preferred approach to learning as well. But I will say the closest thing that I would say to your experience would be in my early days as a real estate investor.
Oh, yeah.
And I was sitting on the sidelines for a long time, taking the typical approach that I always had. I'm going to learn on my own. I'm going to buy a book, read on my own. And when I'm ready to buy, I'm going to do it on my own. But I would see online and in person, you would see, let's say you go drive by a hotel and you would see that there was a seminar. Mm-hmm. Or you would be at a conference center and see that there was like a really big conference that was focused on wealth building. And I always kind of felt like those things were kind of scammy, if I'm just being honest. And I do think that actually there's a significant part of them that are kind of scammy. Like you get there, they talk a lot of hype, but ultimately they just want you to buy something of theirs.
Right.
And I think going back to the point that we're talking about, that's what leads to the hesitance that a lot of people feel. They don't really know when to level up. They don't really know how much is, let's say, fair amount that they should be charging for community or coaching or coursing or any type of supplemental education. And I think that's part of what makes it really, really challenging for people.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think one of the reasons we wanted to talk about this is because we meet so many people who say something like, you know, I'm being really mindful of my money and I want to level up, but I just can't wrap my head around needing to pay money to access people or information. And because online communities that require some sort of subscription are becoming more of the norm, I thought it'd be worthwhile to just kind of talk through how we approach stuff like that and determine whether something is worth it. I'm using air quotes, or is valuable to us. And to your point, it's really interesting how we apply our real world experience to the digital world. In some cases, we can wrap our head around paying for access to something that exists, right? We can wrap our head around paying dues for a fraternity or a sorority.
Right.
We can wrap our head around colleges charging money for their coursework, but we're still wary of the digital version of that. And immediately people default to like the scammy hotel room, like summits or whatever.
Yeah, I'm trying really hard not to name specific programs.
Please don't.
But I know several of them I've walked by, and in some cases, just being honest, I've seen people that I know and love and I see them there and I've judged. I feel like, oh gosh, like this is where you are. This is what we're doing. But, you know, again, there's a lot of that stuff out there and ultimately it boils down to people needing more money. We've spoken about that in previous podcasts, I'm pretty sure. I'm sure we've done webinars and other things. It's certainly a very touchy issue. At the end of the day, people need more money and there are a lot of people who are aware of that and they are positioning themselves to kind of take advantage of it. And so you're absolutely right. It's one of the unspoken issues that people have. And I'm really glad we're having that conversation today.
Yeah, I think one of the things that gets people a little caught up is whether to consider money that they're spending on their personal development and enriching their lives as an investment or an expense, right? When you categorize it as an expense, it feels like there's a risk there that you're wasting money or that the money could have gone towards an investment or a more responsible purchase, if that makes sense. But like, How do you think about spending money on things that are going to enhance your life or your business? Do you think of it as an expense or do you think of it as an investment or like a combination of both?
Well, I think the first thing is to look at those costs for your life and your business as two separate things, right? So if we're looking at our business, what I'm primarily looking at is whether or not there is a plan in place for us to take full advantage of whatever it is that we're choosing to invest in. And so the first thing that I can think of is as we were going into this year and thinking about all of the different projects and commitments and clients and things that we needed to complete, we needed to make sure that our work environment was conducive to that. And
right.
So we went shopping for a co-working space.
Mm-hmm.
And we were also, I would say, a bit optimistic about the direction of the pandemic. I think it's fair to say at that point, we were thinking we wouldn't be, you know, let's say in this uptick that we're in. So
right.
As of the time we're recording this, it's August, and we are experiencing and seeing that the COVID variant is actually causing more and more cases. And so all of that to say, we were much more optimistic earlier, and we were sorting through the pros and the cons. And I think one of the pros when we were considering getting a co-working space was, one, it just got us out of the house. We'd spent a year, a lot of time together, and we know the value of just getting out of the house, even if it's just to take a walk.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we started thinking about whether or not there was a strong likelihood that there'd be a compounding effect on our productivity or our creativity or just energy levels and that having a positive impact on our work, that was something that we thought and therefore considered a pro. And yes, that would be a worthwhile investment. The other one that we looked at was the impact of being surrounded by like-minded people.
Right.
And so we're like-minded, obviously, but you know, the more and more we talk, the more we work together, we're just going to constantly be in a bit of a cycle. And you could argue our own little echo chamber. And not
yeah.
to say that
and
we're
we
gonna
encounter different issues.
Correct. Correct. So it's not to say that we're going to go to a co-working space and then approach a stranger and say, hey, what do you think about this article? But when you are in that environment and you just naturally see someone, and it could be something simple like, hey, what camera is that?
Right.
Or you're working on a new laptop and I'm in the market for one. Hey, what is that product or what is that attachment that you're using? How did you upload this that fast, et cetera? You don't get that nearly as much when you're just stuck at home. And so we were thinking about all of the primary and secondary and even tertiary benefits. Now, of course, there is a consequence or a cons to, let's say, in our case, getting a co-working space. And the first one was cost.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were all over the board and we were pretty, you know, smart and savvy in the way that we approached it. So we looked at, let's say, the cheapest version, just to see, could we make it work? We looked at some in the mid-range, and then we looked at the high range just to get a general idea of what we would be getting for our money. One range from like $50 a month, on the high end, somewhere upwards of like $500 a month, and we couldn't even wrap our heads around whether or not it was really, really worth it. And so all that to say, we ended up settling for something in the middle. We don't use it as much these days, but we have used it, and when we did use it, we were really, really getting the most out of it. And so mm-hmm. I think we've ended up being happy for our with the decision that we've made. But how would you view it?
I don't know. I think that's a good rundown of kind of how we evaluated, looking at the pros and the cons and what we gain. I like to call it the pain gain ratio of what it costs us versus what we get. But I think in order for something to be considered an investment, it needs to be tied to some sort of formal plan. And we did. We wanted to use it for meeting space. We wanted to use it to just kind of get out of the house. We know what a change in environment does for our creative process. And I feel like it's been a good investment. I don't regret spending the money at all. And, you know, I don't know how long it'll last. Eventually, we'll go back and reevaluate whether the needs are being met. But so far, I consider it to be a good investment.
Yeah. The other benefit I would add in there that I think also helped us to make that decision was that there was some built-in flexibility
right.
with the co-working space, which depending on what you're talking about leveling up or buying into, you may not always have the option to do that. But I do think that that's certainly something that people should be looking for. Do you have the flexibility to exit when you want to? Because I think that's a huge benefit to make people say, yeah, I'm ready to level up, but I'm not necessarily ready to make a long-term, let's say, 4 or 5 figure commitment. And so in those cases, you really want to look for that option. Is it a 30-day, you know, money back guarantee, or is it a month-to-month sort of pricing structure that allows you to get in and get out as needed, or whatever it is that I think gives you flexibility, but ensures that you're not like standing still or stalling and being stuck in this phase of consideration.
Right. So going back to kind of our methodology on how we decide to pay for something, I think the first thing we do is decide whether we've exhausted our free or lower cost option. Right. So in the case of the co-working space, you know, before we had that, we worked from the kitchen table. And then when that didn't work anymore because our papers kept getting greasy and nobody wants to clear up laptops just to have a meal, we set up a desk downstairs. And then finally, when that didn't work because it was being overrun by toys and it was just very difficult to record things, we started looking outside of the home. So we kind of graduated from this free option to a one-time cost option to this recurring cost. And I think that's an important part of the process to at least start with the free option to understand, you know, what your interests are.
Yeah. And I think you've got to get a grasp on what you're losing by choosing the cheaper or free option as well. In some right. cases, it may be you miss out on access. But mm-hmm. in our case, it was like you don't have the ability to thoroughly analyze a critical problem because you don't have the space that even supports your right. ability to do so. You can't map it out because you don't have a white space.
Right.
You can't lay these things up because the table isn't long enough mm-hmm. or isn't shaped the right way and so on. And we've got that benefit or we've had the benefit of learning those skills at work when we were in our traditional jobs, and we just weren't able to replicate some of those things at home. And so for us, it made sense to do that. For others, it may be equipment or whatever it is, right? But I think going through that type of process, making sure that you've exhausted all of the options. But I think that at some point, you've got to make that decision.
And that's, yeah. I want to pivot a little bit to talk about online, because there are a lot of free options for everything online. And I belong to several free communities online. Most of them are through Facebook groups and are organized by interest. But I also participate in a few that are on other platforms like Success Achievers, for example. But I think one of the biggest examples of the biggest benefits of joining a really active community within, you know, your subject of interest is how many perspectives you get on one topic mm-hmm. for free. So the other day I asked a question about first day of school traditions. I, you know, told them I'm not a mom who tends to buy props to celebrate milestones. And I was just really interested in learning from the community about how they creatively celebrate their child's first day of school.
Which community was this?
This was in
Mom's group or something?
Yeah, I think it was Women of Color Pursuing Financial Independence.
Okay.
That was the group. But I also participate in general women's personal finance groups and mom's groups. But it was targeted to the mothers. There's more than just mothers in this group. And I got like 30 different answers about how, you know, money conscious moms celebrate the milestone without spending a bunch of cash. Sometimes it was just like, oh, he takes a picture in this t-shirt that says class of 2032. And, you know, every year the t-shirt gets smaller and smaller because he's getting bigger. Or it could be donuts, or it could be, you know, a porch picture. It was just really nice to see that, you know, people were willing to give me tips and advice. And it was also kind of validating that I don't have to be this mom that, you know, I don't want to be.
Yeah.
Now, you don't participate in the online communities as much as I do.
I don't.
I mean, some of them you do. You're very active in Success Achievers, but like the Facebook groups and all that stuff, you don't really do that.
No. And again, I think a lot of it goes back to just my upbringing, me being raised an only child. But I also think, just based on my experience, that I don't find a lot of them to be very useful. And I'm just being yeah. fair. I'm not going to call a lot of them out. I'm also a big fan of just focus. Mm-hmm. Right. At some point, you've got to stop learning and start applying. And I find that it just adds to the distraction to have more and more people in the room. It's more voices in my head. It's more opinions, more perspectives. And there's a negative to that because you tend to have tunnel vision and you only know what you know. You're not allowing other opinions in, per mm-hmm. se. But yeah. that's a part of the reason why I tend to stay away from them. But I will also say one of the things that I found, and I think this is also something that I've experienced over the last year, that there's just an overwhelming sense of self-centeredness in a lot of these groups where yeah. it's just a lot of, you know, ego and a lot of bragging. Mm. And that is a huge turnoff for me. Mm-hmm. I remember one of the few courses that I did actually bite the bullet and decide to take. And that was for a very clear reason. It was because I had, let's say, 4 of the 5 critical skills that I knew that I needed in order to complete a certain task and take our business and or just our entrepreneurial endeavors to the next level. And this course solved that specific need. Now, I will say it I didn't have the choice to just buy the things that I wanted. If I did, I would have loved that. Naturally, the way that it was priced, it was kind of like you've got to buy everything. But I did my research. I sat on it. I, you know, sought first person testimonials. Mm-hmm. I, you know, really, really did my research to make sure whether or not I was going to get what I intended out of the course. And I did for the most part. But I also knew that if I didn't get the instruction that I needed, that there was a chance that I was going to throw a bunch of money down the drain unnecessarily. And the bottom line was the cost of failure outweighed the cost of the course.
Right.
Right. And so that was the big thing for me. And that was part of the reason why I went ahead, bit the bullet, and I don't have any regrets.
Yeah. I remember that course. That was a course that came with a community, which
it came with a community. It came yeah. with a bunch of stuff. Like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I got to agree with you there. Like, one of the downsides of free groups is dealing with all of the varying degrees of knowledge. There are some times where a group is growing really fast and has a lot of new members. And so one day you may be reading a thread about how to do a backdoor Roth IRA from like an OG member. And then the next day you're dealing with, you know, more beginner questions or more like foundational questions. And it just kind of takes up your timeline and suppresses the content that you really wanted to see. The other thing to keep in mind in these free groups is that in most cases, the admins of the groups are volunteers and they'll moderate the discussion for abuse, but not necessarily for accuracy. So to your point about a lot of voices coming in, a lot of noise being added, you really don't know if all of that is true or not. So although you get a bunch of different perspectives, you still have to be careful about how you engage with strangers and their advice.
And to that point, you also don't know whether or not the moderators of those groups are even qualified to make a correction.
Right.
Right. They may just have a competing point of view.
Correct.
Or even if they're censoring something, that could be highly subjective. And so for me, it was just more unnecessary data inputs.
Yeah.
And it conflicted with my preferred learning style. And that's part of the reason why
yeah.
I decided against it.
Yeah. I mean, for me, that's one of the biggest benefits for actually paying to participate in an online community. It's more of like a controlled and curated environment. That's not to say that there aren't still people who will post advice that you may not resonate with, but there's certainly more oversight. And because everybody is paying, there's like a certain respect for the rules. It's kind of like living in a neighborhood with an HOA, except they're not like annoying or they don't do like surprise checks on your yard and like grass length or whatever.
No, I completely agree with that. There is certainly a different level of respect that I've seen happens in, let's say, communities that you have to pay to be a part of versus the one where the door is always open.
Right.
Yeah. And so to your point about whether or not people are interested in taking that, if that's one of the turnoffs for you, if it just seems like there are a bunch of, dare I say, rookies or beginners, and they're asking basic questions, but you're looking for something that's a bit more advanced, that typically is a bit of an indicator that you need mm-hmm. to buy up in order to level up so
yeah.
that you have a bit more access to the right type of information and voices and regulation that you may need. And I think that's also where I am as well, because I'm you know, it almost sounds arrogant in some ways, but I'm beyond the beginner stage and
right.
in quite a few things. I'm a little older, a little savvier. And so if I'm looking for access or to join a part of a community, it typically has to come with certain advanced levels of
yeah.
information, or in some cases, just one-on-one coaching where
right.
I don't need to have, or let's say, a very specific curated group of people that are insured to be qualified to be where they are. They've paid a certain premium for hands-on or what they call white glove service. That's sort of thing. So
yeah, for me, it's all about the amenities, right? Like when you have budget as a community manager, community organizer, or the leader of, you know, one of these organizations, it allows you to do things like bring in experts to
yep.
talk to your members. So to your point, if they're not qualified as the leader of this organization to speak on tax prep, they can actually pay a CPA to come in and like answer questions. You also get good quality content and like a more active voice and what kind of content is created. You just get like I think white glove service is the right word. You know, you get feedback on your work and you get to stay motivated to keep going. I just think there's this power in social accountability instead of just like individual accountability.
Yeah, and not to change subjects, but I think that there was a bit of a parallel there, not even just about community. But right. sometimes it's just about service levels.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You can be part of a program or use a free version of a tool and it will only give you so much. That's mm-hmm. not just because they're trying to rip you off.
Right.
You know what I mean? But if you've reached a certain point where you're ready to level up and you know that either your business or personally you are ready for the next level, mm-hmm. I think one of the best things you can do is to level up, to be willing to spend that money and to trust in yourself,
yes.
your own discretion, and to be at a point where you can say, yes, I can, I'm not going to say, yes, I can afford this, but yes, it's worth it.
Yes, exactly. And that's actually a great segue into the next thing that we consider when we're talking about whether to purchase something is this purchase going to save us time and or money? And they're kind of the same thing in our book. Every time I say save time, I think about this mentor who told me that I need to stop talking about time as if the only thing I can do is save it. Like I was somebody who over optimized on time. And so now it's really about using my time differently, right? And so there's certain courses and programs and content that allows me to use my time differently. Instead of scouring the internet and pulling together my own curriculum and syllabus on how to like do the thing I want to do, I trust the skills of whoever I'm buying from to serve me with the most relevant information on the topic. And then beyond that, beyond just like pulling together, what do I need to know about this topic? It gets kind of abstract for me because I'm a learner who experiences really early frustration when I'm tackling new things. So like if I don't immediately get it, like instantly, I get frustrated and impatient. I just have this like unconscious bias that things should come easily to me. And so having programs that are community centric and offer aspects of coaching always help me kind of shorten my learning curve and lean into the experience of confusion because I can go into the message boards. I can see that other people were struggling with the same concept. We can help each other. I can go to other people besides the teacher and ask for help. So for me, it's just about knowing myself and recognizing where I'm going to save time and energy and, you know, effort.
I totally agree. I'm also really happy to hear you admit that on record. I'm going to take a break right here.
That's not what this podcast is about.
Let's take a break for a quick ad and so that I can download this and print it out so I have it forever. And we'll be back to let you finish up that thought in just a second. Okay, you were back. I'm sorry. Okay, and we're back.
Yeah, so
you were saying
I was talking about how we consider whether a course is going to save a course or a program, really just an investment in ourselves is going to save time, money, energy, effort. And I'm just wondering if that's been your experience as well.
Yes. No, I completely agree. For me, the bigger thing is around time, but also income potential. Right. I've experienced enough times in my life where my fear of spending money it got in the way of me earning more. Mm-hmm. And so that's happened enough times for me to know, not necessarily to say yes to every opportunity that's marketed to me or presented to me. But I've had enough of those experiences to allow me to say, OK, I certainly don't need to disregard something just because there's a cost associated to it.
Right.
And I think for a lot of people, if you're anything like me and frugality comes easily to you, you might naturally be opposed to anything that is that has a cost associated to it.
Right.
And I think that's part of what we're getting at. So in a sense, I completely agree with you.
Yeah. Okay. So we've talked about how we first consider, have we exhausted the free or the lower cost version? Then we move on to, will this product or course save us time or money, or in your case, increase our earning potential. And then the last thing that we consider is whether or not the seller is high integrity.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is a bit abstract, but here's the thing. Whenever we're thinking about buying into anything for our personal development or investing in any program that has some sort of recurring fee, we walk into those situations believing that there should be an end to it. For example, if you are considering signing up for like Toastmasters to improve your public speaking, if Toastmasters does what it's supposed to do, you should actually outgrow the need to continue with the program, right? And so we go into any opportunity sort of looking for what that out is, kind of like what Julian said, looking for the flexibility or looking for the milestone or the result that allows us to end our relationship with that program.
Yeah. So my version of scouring the internet for odd hot takes and weird information is one of the things that I actually enjoy doing is watching crime shows and fraud shows. And so I've watched every episode of American Greed you can think of. And the reason for that is because it helps me to fine tune what my first teacher in grad school called my book. And so I remember we spent an entire day combing through how data is presented and how data is manipulated, a certain language. And this was an accounting class. It had absolutely nothing to do with any of these things. But the perspective he was coming at was when you're looking at data, whether it's stock charts or a presentation, et cetera, these are some of the things that people tend to do to conflate or let's say exaggerate information. Yes. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I find really, really fascinating, not because I want to replicate those things, but because I know that it's so incredibly prevalent out there. We talk about this in our book. We talk about this in person. We talk about this casually. And I think it's one of the things that impacts why people never quite level up, because unfortunately, those, let's just call them scam artists, set the tone sometimes for what messaging looks like. They make really, really big promises to lure you in and guarantees and all of those things. And I will tell you, anyone that is guaranteeing something is probably exaggerating, because no one can guarantee anything. I don't care if it's a credit score increase or if it's a specific ROI. Like, all of those things are most likely huge exaggerations. And there's a reason why they are saying that, because they want to help you get over any hesitation that you feel and get you to spend money with them. And so I completely hear you in terms of making sure that as you're considering this, that you're buying from a seller with integrity. To your point, you are absolutely right in that that's something that I'm big on. I call it outgrowing your hero, right? Otherwise, or what I mean by that is, if you have assigned this sort of hero status, whether it's a mentor, role model, it doesn't matter. If you're actually consuming what they're sharing with you, internalizing it and acting on it, at some point you should outgrow that advice. You should outgrow that message. And it could even just be software, or it's a community, or whatever it is. If you're growing, you should outgrow the platform, the voices, the levels of mentorship that you had. If you're not, then you're likely running in place. And unfortunately, there are tons of programs and platforms and people
that are meant to keep you running in place.
Keep you exactly where you are. And so, to your point, you absolutely have to have a end to whatever it is that you're doing. It makes me think of FinCon, which is a community that we are part of. So if you ever heard of Comic Con or Dragon Con, there is literally a con for financial money nerds like us. And we've gone to it every year, with the exception of last year, since 2017. And it's been a great experience. Every time we go, we meet with people from all over the country, in some cases the world. The first time we went, we were just quiet as a church mouse. We didn't say anything.
We were attendees and we were starstruck.
We were looking at the people that we'd admired and read about and listened to and watched on YouTube, and we're like, oh my gosh, that's him, that's her. It was amazing. The second year, we actually won an award, and then we kind of gained a level of popularity, and then people started looking at us that way. The third year, we won an even bigger award, and so on and so on.
And started speaking on panels.
Mentoring
other attendees. Mentoring
others. And now this year, when we go in September, I believe, it's going to be held in Austin, Texas. We're actually going to be big idea speakers speaking to the main stage to thousands of people. And so that, I think, is one example of how you can enter, and I believe should enter, a community, start at one level, learn, get better, and so on. The price of attendance has actually gone up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But to our point, and this isn't to brag, as you start to grow, you kind of get the benefit of actually not even having to pay anymore. In our case, we're going as speakers. We're being paid to actually go to a conference that we had to save money for to attend 3 to 4 years ago. That's not going to be the case for everyone, obviously. But the point is, when you enter or choose to enter these communities, there's going to be a cost associated to it. And for us, there was an end date. We actually said last year was the last year that we were going to go, because we realized that, okay, if we're taking the same notes and we're writing down the same thing and meeting the same people, we're not actually attending this conference for the purposes of learning or growing. We're actually just going to meet up with our friends, which I don't know that we necessarily need to pay a ticket to do. So,
right. Yeah. To your point, FinCon is like a special example for us, and every example is not going to look like that. I think what the point that we're trying to make is that, one, nothing should be like a forever experience. So look for programs that talk about their students and their alumni and what they've gone on to do. Look for public wins and examples of successes that people have had. But also, like, even if you don't leave a community, be open to changing your role within it, right? Like, even if you decide that you're not going to go to a conference or you're not going to renew your subscription to something, it doesn't mean that you have to completely abandon the community that you've built. You can still hold relationships, have relationships, or stay in the community now with a new goal, not of necessarily learning from them, but of teaching, of refining your methodology, of making sure that the things that you believe in still hold up as younger and more diverse people come into the space.
Yeah, so, I know we're bouncing around, but I'll use another example just to offer a slightly different perspective. Let's say we're not talking about community. Let's say we're talking about a tool. The fact that you're graduating to a new tool, you should actually be looking at as a good thing.
Yeah.
Right? Our CPA had a very, you know, we had a similar experience talking to our CPA. They were asking us about the version of QuickBooks that we were on. And after they looked at our numbers, she actually recommended, well, one, you should probably consider upgrading your business from an LLC to an S Corp because you guys are earning enough income to sort of justify this transition, and you'll be able to save money on your taxes that way. If you start thinking about the version of QuickBooks that we're using, or a lot of the software subscriptions that we had, I actually look at it as a bit of an award now. It's a bit of an internal celebration that, oh, we qualify and can afford to use, and in some cases, flat out, absolutely need the most expensive version of this tool because it's such an integral part of our development and or our business. And so it's really just a different way of thinking about it. And I think that hopefully helps to push a couple of people over the hump and to get them to think differently whenever they're being presented with, I'm using air quotes here, an opportunity to buy something, whether it's a course or a community or a program, seminar, a cruise, whatever.
Yeah. So I think the way to kind of land the plane on this is to really focus on goal setting. We've talked a lot about these programs and these coaches and these courses and platforms, but the reality is they don't do the work for you, right? You shouldn't sign up for any of these things without also recognizing that you own a piece of your results. And that's kind of where goal setting comes in. I think it's really important before you sign up for anything to actually write very specific and measurable goals for yourself. Don't just sign up for, keep going back to Toastmasters for some reason, but don't just sign up for Toastmasters looking for the result of being a better speaker. Actually set a goal for yourself about how often you're going to attend meetings. How are you going to practice? How many times are you going to watch footage of yourself? How many times are you going to, you know, sign up for free speaking gigs just to get, you know, your feet wet? It just, again, introduces accountability in the right way. And it reminds you about like how resourceful you can be and kind of gives you something to measure progress against so that you know that when you're hitting these milestones of outgrowing the program or needing to change your role within it, you're aware it's been tracked.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. Okay, let's wrap this up. Do you have any closing thoughts?
Yeah. So bottom line, I think, you know, one of the keys to having a modern money mindset is to commit to continually learning. And sometimes that education may come with a cost, especially the further along that you get. But at the end of the day, you just budget for it, right? You don't have to overcomplicate the fact that it's not free. You just simply budget for it the same way that you have categories for food, transportation, entertainment. You should have an annual commitment for your learning. That way it's not impulsive. It doesn't exist without a plan. It's not something that you have to feel guilty about doing. It's something that you said you were going to do. And it doesn't even have to be a huge amount. It can be something like $500 a year. And that's enough to buy a few books, take a few webinars, upgrade your news media and get some of that paywalled content. And, you know, maybe even join a community for a year to see how you like it. Like, that's enough. $500 is enough money today to still do quite a bit towards your learning.
I love that. And again, that $500 could unlock thousands of dollars.
Right.
It could be the skill set that you need to help level up in your job, or it could be, you know, unlocking access to information or tools or software that makes you faster or more efficient, etc. I have similar takeaway, no surprise there. And it's that there's a natural conflict between wanting to be better at something and trying to minimize your expenses. In today's world, unfortunately, for a lot of the good stuff, you got to be willing to pay to play. And so if you want unbiased news, to Kirsten's point, there's a cost associated to that. If you want to be, or if you want specifically biased news.
Right. I want my news biased.
Exactly. There is a cost to that as well. If you want to be world class at something, like, that's typically not going to be something that you can just get or acquire for free. And you certainly can't expect someone to help get you over the hump without there being some type of incentive for them. And oftentimes there's a cost with that, and so on and so on. Very few of the people that we know that are successful got there without some type of lift, support, or amplification from a community. And there's a cost to all of that. And so the bottom line is, you can't let that get in the way. You have to be willing to spend the money sometimes to get to the next level.
Amen. It's so funny when you brought up if you want to be world class at something, like, the reality is, if you want to be world class at something, there's really only a handful of people who can probably teach you and get you there. And the reason I think about that was because I was watching Olympic speed walking, and I was just like, man, how do you find...
There's Olympic speed walking?
Yes, Olympic speed walking. And there's rules, like, both feet can't be above... Anyway, I was just thinking, like, where do you have to live in the country to get access to a... speed walking coach to get you to Olympic levels? Like, they got to be concentrated in like a couple cities.
Don't Google that, because that's just going to lead
on next week's rabbit hole.
You're going to get a bunch of speed walkers on your social media profile. Hey, do you want to learn how to walk faster?
All right. And on that note, thank you for listening to another episode of the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success. If you like what you heard, please speed walk on over to the ratings and review page and leave us a 5-star rating and review. We will see you all next week.
I set them up and she knocks them down. But don't.